Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Tyke. Before the break, we spoke with two organizers of the Tosa All City Read, which features two books organizers are hoping people will read. One is the young adult fantasy novel Hollow Earth by Wauwatosa resident Carol Barrowman and her brother, actor John Barrowman. The fast-paced novel and its sequel, Bone Quill, play out in modern-day Scotland and in the Middle Ages, and feature twins Matt and Emily Calder, who share a unique trait and ability to bring things to life through drawing. Carol Barrowman is also an English professor at Alverno College, and we have brought her to life in our studio. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, Mitch. It's a pleasure.
What does it mean as an author to be part of a citywide reading initiative?
Well, first of all, it means people are stopping you everywhere you go on the street and saying, oh, I just saw your picture on this book and I've bought the book. That's really the best part of it. My neighbors are reading my book, and I think that's what's most fun. And I've gotten an opportunity to be able to get into all the schools as a result of that, which is amazing. I love talking to kids about writing and about reading, and so that's been great. But I think the biggest honor has been the fact that it's all my neighbors that are going to read my book, and I'm really thrilled about that.
Well, so, I mean, you're going into schools. The organizers of the All City Read, you know, talk about it from a community-building standpoint, but you go into schools, and schools are kind of these built-in communities already. So I wonder if, you know, you talk to a lot of students who are assigned a lot of reading. Is part of what you get out of author visits maybe a chance to kind of spark a love for reading for pleasure?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I also think one of the things that's really important, and at least it is for me, is to encourage people to read with their families. And I think I was excited that the Tosa All City Read picked an adult book and a younger reader book, because that way you can mix and match in a way. You can read with your children and then you can read the adult one on your own. But I have to say, when I go into the schools, partly what I think an author can do is demythologize or deromanticize what it means to be a writer. When I talk to kids, they'll say, especially the younger children will say things like, are you really a writer? Because I think I look pretty normal, you know, and not in
pretty
the,
normal.
Pretty normal. Yeah. Thank you. And so I think it helps them to see that, you know, you can be a regular person. You can be a mom. You can, you know, you can be a grandma. You can be a teacher. You can be, and you can also be a writer. And the kinds of questions that, and this is the selfish part of going into the schools, the questions that I get from the children remind me of how important it is to write children's fiction with as much seriousness and literariness, if I might, as I would if I was writing an adult novel. I can give you a really good example of this. We tried to put little Easter eggs and little things in the narrative that if kids are really paying attention, they can pick up on them. It's not going to ruin the book if they don't by any means. But at the first book, Hollow Earth, is the opening little quote is from William Blake. And I was doing a presentation at the Wauwatosa Library last summer, and at the end, this little girl comes up to me. She's got the book open. She said, you write the quote for William Blake in the front of this book. And then she's flipping through the page. She said, and on page, and I don't even remember the page, on page like 56, you have a character whose name is Blake William. Is that deliberate? And I took such pleasure in saying to her, it is deliberate. And oh my gosh, you are such a good, careful reader. I don't think I had one adult reader caught the little things like that. And so for me, it reinforces my notion that our schools are working hard with these kids and they're learning and they're doing a good job with reading. And I'm really impressed when I talk to children all over, and I've talked to kids all over the country.
Well, and at the same time, I always wonder what, like, the authors of classic novels might think of the idea that the kids are assigned to read their books. I don't, you know, Hemingway probably did not, you know, sit there and write The Old Man and the Sea with the idea that, you know, it would torture generations of high school students.
Yeah, and college students, I must say, too. Yeah, for sure. I think that's probably true. And I think it's nice when teachers especially actually, I was going to say especially in the younger grades, but I think it's nice in college too when teachers give their students choices, because we make choices when we read. And I think that's really important too. And it's nice if a teacher assigns something like Hollow Earth, but I think it's also nice if a kid picks it up and then goes to somebody else in the class and said, "Oh, I just read this. You'll love that." That's awfully cool too.
Well, and I wonder if we've kind of those of us who thought of some books as being assigned and some books as being for pleasure have set up kind of this false dichotomy in our
Absolutely.
Head that there are either books, there are academic books and there are fun books, and that there's no overlap.
Well, and one of the things I like to tell my students is that, the literature is really on a spectrum. And I always say that on one end you've got what I call French fry literature, and on the other end you have French food literature. And almost every book sits somewhere in between. French fries, they're delicious and tasty, but if that's all you read, wouldn't be good for you. And on the other hand, there might be some, French food literature that's just too heavy. And so everything is on that spectrum somewhere, which I think allows you to not deal with that dichotomy. And I still get students who will email me and say, I read this and I didn't think I would read it. It was a French food book. And so I think that for me works, that idea that it's a sort of a spectrum. And we tend to, as we should in college, teach more that's on the French food end of that spectrum. But I think every now and then it's good to remind our people that it's okay if you're reading on that other side. Just have a balanced diet.
Well, and potentially, without overanalyzing it, be able to apply what you've learned.
I'm an English professor.
Right, exactly.
Let's overanalyze
All right.
it.
So potentially be able to use what you've gotten from going through this French food diet to read the French fry literature.
Absolutely. That's exactly, I think what happens is that you realize that you can analyze things that are on that other end of the spectrum with a little more detail and more thought than you can perhaps with the French food literature. But, you probably want to read – the French fry. I'm going to get myself confused now. French fry stuff is great for a plane, Not that you can't do the other, but you want something that's you don't really have to think too much about. But
you don't see a lot of Proust being read on the airplanes.
That's right. And maybe if the person sitting next to you is reading it, you might – I don't know. Maybe you want to move.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think it's nice to have that kind of variety. And it's funny when a lot of students in my beginning lit classes will say things like, "Well, we're just reading everything into this." And as a writer, I'd like to say, you might read some things into it, but you know what? I've crafted this in a way that a lot of the patterns, or writers craft in a way that a lot of the patterns that you see are patterns that are deliberate.
All that said, as you look at Hollow Earth and now Bone Quill and book number 3, the name of which I don't know, but is on its way to the publisher.
Well, yeah, I can tell you, and you could be the first person that I've publicly announced. It's going to be called The Book of Beasts.
Very good. And we'll talk about the significance of that in just a moment. When you look at those and you think back at the kinds of things that you read as you were growing up, were there books that you were either assigned or you just picked up that sparked something that might have shaped these books?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think I was born and raised in Scotland, and I went through the British school system all the way up until I graduated from high school. And so my classics were a little different perhaps than your classics might have been. But I think I read a lot of things like Jane Austen I had to read in high school. Dickens we read in high school. So definitely those kinds of big Victorian novels influenced me. But I was actually, when I was a young child, was in the hospital for maybe about 6 weeks recovering from a blood disorder. And my teacher, I'll never forget her. Her name was Mrs. Silver. She was my third or fourth grade teacher at the time. And she brought me every book from her library. And I read all of them. And so I just, from then on, just couldn't get enough books. I read every Enid Blyton. I read C.S. Lewis, The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. But I think the book, and I hope readers might get this if when they read the third one, that really has influenced a lot of the second and the third book, more the third one, is Jules Verne's Journey to the Center of the Earth, because Hollow Earth is underneath the islands. It's at the center of the earth. And so I hope readers who like Jules Verne might see some of that in the third one.
Well, and we should, without giving short shrift to Bone Quill, at least catch people up on the story. We're picking up where Hollow Earth left off. Twins Matt and Emily Calder are the kids of a mother who's an Animare and a father who is a guardian. Right off the bat, remind us the significance of those two terms.
Well, Animare are artists, some famous that we know and some that are fictional, but they're artists who, when they draw, they can bring their drawings to life and can move – the twins can move in and out of famous paintings. In Hollow Earth, the very first painting they move into that sets off all the adventures is one of Georges Seurat's paintings. And the guardians are people who have also a unique ability to what's called inspirit people. They can help. They're empaths, and they can help artists become artists so that they can control their powers and not reveal to the world that they are Animare. Because if an Animare were to fall into the wrong hands, think of what could happen. If everything that person could draw came to life, it would not be a good thing if that fell into the wrong hands. So in the first book, that starts all the adventures. In the second book, I don't think it's too huge of a spoiler to figure out that the twins figure out that they can time travel through particular paintings if the paintings have been drawn by an Animare.
We haven't mentioned that they're basically staying at this monastery, which their grandfather is in charge of, and this is where, as we learned in Hollow Earth, essentially the portal to Hollow Earth is located up on the Firth of Clyde.
Yes, that's right. That's right, and set in a couple of little islands right off the western coast of Scotland. And when the children discover who they are, that they are Animare, they flee with their mom to this abbey monastery that has its roots in the Middle Ages and has the islands themselves, the children discover in the second book, have some supernatural qualities. And Hollow Earth, they discover over the course of the two books, is a place where all the beasts and monsters that have ever been imagined in books and in stories are trapped and kept. And so it's probably no big shock for readers to think that by the time we get to the third book, we're going to head into Hollow Earth at some point. Teaser there.
Exactly. Well, and Bone Quill leaves off with a kind of a significant cliffhanger. And it led me to wonder, how do you know when to end one of these books, given that obviously you've got to have some sense for where the story is going to go?
Well, and I think it's really a great question because it's a very hard thing to do. And I think it's one of the things that I have learned from writing this series. When John and I plotted this out, my brother John and I sort of plotted this out together and did all of the outlining for the three. We actually had the three books plotted at the very beginning. We thought this should happen in the first book. We want to build their powers so they time travel in the second book. And then something else really cool occurs in the third book. And we knew where we wanted it to end. Some readers, if you're reading carefully, there's enough foreshadowing that I'm hoping, obviously, if the book opens with them in a piece of art, there's a good chance it's going to close with something big happening in a piece of art. And the arc, when we were dividing it up, I had actually planned another chapter to end Hollow Earth. And our editor came back and she said, let's cut it off right here. Let's cut it off right here and have this be the beginning of the third one and leave this cliffhanger because it's too important and too big and let's let it sit there. So I have to say it was another reader that helped, an editor that helped figure out where that break would be. I was going to find a little more resolution as we went on from there. I also was going to actually I wanted to kill off a particular character at the end of the second book, and John and I went back and forth with that for quite a while because he was adamant that that we not do that. So,
and as the second book closes, we don't know.
You don't know. And so I'm not going to say what happens. I think people will be surprised and delighted and maybe a little shocked at where the third book goes. But I hope they're surprised by who ends up being the big hero at the end of the second book, because I think it's not usual I'm trying not to give it away, yeah. But I think it's not usual that that kind of character, at least,
has such a pivotal role.
Yeah.
And at the same time, given the cliffhanger nature of the end of this, there's a certain responsibility to get the next one out pretty quickly.
Absolutely. And you have young children. You know that when they get engaged in a story, they want to know the next thing, that they want to know something's coming. And a lot of young readers will not even pick up a first book if they don't think that there's two or three more coming, because they get so attached to the characters that they want to know they can live with them for a little longer.
Oh, well, Carol Barrowman, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Hope we'll see you and your brother back in these studios soon.
Thanks for having me, Mitch. It's a pleasure.
Wauwatosa writer Carol Barrowman is the co-author, along with her brother John Barrowman, of the young adult fantasy novels Hollow Earth and Bone Quill. Hollow Earth is one of two selections for the first ever TOSA All-City Read. You'll find a link to our 2012 interview with Carol and John Barrowman at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. That's Wednesday's show. I'm Mitch Teich. So glad you could listen today, and I sure hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next.